Welcome back. And now to consider the legacy of September 11th, 2001 on film with Garen Daly, movie reviewer for the New England Cable News Network and the frugal film guy for word of mouth. Nice to have you back, Garen.
My pleasure.
9/11 is and was a traumatic event that we're still living with. How did Hollywood respond?
They didn't know how to respond. Right after 9/11, 45 films in the next several months were either rewritten, changed, dropped, or rescheduled.
Or reshot in some cases.
And reshot in some. The biggest one, the one everyone talked about, was Spider-Man Poster, where they had a helicopter trapped by Spider-Man's web that was strung between the two twin towers.
Oh, my. So when did Hollywood finally start becoming more comfortable with it and making films?
They're not. They're still not comfortable with it. And there's a lot of reasons for that. You look at the films that have come out since that time. You take a look at United 93.
Right, some of the more obvious ones. United 93, about the plane that went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
And still, when the film came out, people said, it's too soon. We can't talk about it now.
Hello? Mom? It's me, Elizabeth. Hello, darling. Are you okay? Mom, we've been hijacked, and I'm calling to say goodbye. Why would you want to do that?
So, United 93, very obvious one.
Right.
Loose Change, Fahrenheit 9/11,
right.
The Michael Moore documentary.
Which actually did gross very, very well, but I think it grossed very, very well because it took the fear that we had of 9/11 and turned it into this angry diatribe against the administration that was currently in power.
Let's hear a little bit from Michael Moore's film from 2004, Fahrenheit 9/11.
In the days following September 11th, all commercial and private airline traffic was grounded.
The FAA has taken the action to close all of the airports in the United States.
Even grounding the president's father, former President Bush, on a flight forced to land in Milwaukee.
Thousands of travelers were stranded, among them Ricky Martin, due to appear at tonight's Latin Grammy Awards.
Not even Ricky Martin could fly.
But really, who wanted to fly? No one. Except the Bin Ladens.
So those movies and films like Restrepo, for example, the documentary about troops in Afghanistan. I'm thinking also of Syriana.
The Kingdom.
The Kingdom. Yes, they are talking about the legacy of 9/11, but they seem to me to be in some way dealing with the fear.
Yes, I think so. But the audiences weren't there to enjoy or to feel comfortable with that fear so they could kind of process it. It really was, believe it or not, The Dark Knight, the Batman film, basically a comic book action adventure film. But if you start looking at the subtext is all about fear. You look at the character, the Joker, and take away the wonderful performance by Heath Ledger and turn him into a terrorist. And you turn Batman into somebody who is looking for revenge for some tragic event in his life. And all of a sudden you have a country and you have an attacker. You have the United States and you have terrorism. That was the only way that people could feel comfortable with addressing that kind of fear. So it was there, but it was underneath. It was being it was below the radar.
Let's hear just a clip from The Dark Knight. This is the 2008 film directed by Christopher Nolan. Brilliant performance, as Garen mentioned, by Heath Ledger.
Do I really look like a guy with a plan? You know what I am? I'm a dog chasing cars. I wouldn't know what to do with one if I caught it. You know, I just do things. The mob has plans. The cops have plans. Gordon's got plans. You know, they're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds. I'm not a schemer. I try to show the schemers how pathetic their attempts to control things really are.
Hollywood has used the comic book action hero as a vehicle for us to not only address the fear that we may have, but more importantly, the vulnerability that we still have and haven't dealt with as a culture or as a country.
Garen, this reminds me of, we've got this almost comically evil character in The Joker. I mean, is this so very different from the rubber monster movies in the post-war Japanese period, where evil characters were allegories for the atom bomb, the much bigger thing than they could deal with?
Well, Godzilla, 1956, 11 years after Japan had to surrender and after the atomic bomb had hit Nagasaki and Hiroshima, yes, there are similarities. But let's take a look at tragedies that happened in America. Pearl Harbor, 1941. The first film that really addressed that was Tora, Tora, Tora in 1970. 29 years. Even think about the Titanic. All right, there were a couple of films made about the Titanic in the 50s, but still, that was 40 years after the fact. So it's not unusual for us as Americans, as part of our culture, to deal with something so tragic and so vulnerable, that made us so vulnerable, that we deal with it many, many years later when we have the luxury of having hindsight. Right now, how Hollywood is dealing with it is by creating these subtext movies where we can deal with the fear, but it's not about 9/11.
Or conversely, I mean, I'm thinking a lot of these action thrillers, the Independence Day, when the Americans somehow get back at these otherworldly attackers.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you brought that up, because one of the more intriguing little tidbits of information I found was right after 9/11, video stores saw a huge spike in rentals of not only Independence Day, but Die Hard. Huh. So again, they were supplementing that fear, that vulnerability, by watching an action adventure film. Somehow that was empowering. Somehow that was comfortable. We're still doing that today.
Vengeance is much easier to deal with than sadness or fear or vulnerability.
Or vulnerability, the fact that we are part of a global world. We like to think of ourselves as being very insular and very superior to the rest of the parts of the world, yet we are very, very similar to everybody else.
Well, Garen, one of the films that stands out for me so much in this post-9/11 period about really the triumph of the human spirit despite what happened is the film Man on Wire, which never even mentioned or had any imagery at all of the September 11th attacks.
But what it does do is it shows the human spirit that the man on the wire does when he crosses that wire across the Twin Towers. Mm-hmm. There's something very powerful about not saying something about it, because it makes it more of a good memory for us rather than a bad memory.
Beyond anything you can ever imagine. Mind-boggling.
I saw his face changing.
Now I'm going to perform. This is probably the end of my life, to step on that wire. Death is very close.
Okay, so 10 years later, you know, it's not 29 years and Tora, Tora, Tora hasn't come out yet, but 10 years later, are we ready to take this on? What's coming out?
Well, obviously, the big film that we're all excited about is the new Catherine Bigelow film, The Search for Osama bin Laden, which she started before Osama bin Laden was killed by the SEAL Team 6. So I'm very, very curious to see whether or not we're going to use that film as our tipping point to really come to grips with what transpired on 9/11.
So obviously, Catherine Bigelow also, by the way, directed the terrific film The Hurt Locker,
which
won
an Oscar, but still did not do well. It only did $15 million.
Okay, so we've established for the world after September 11th, our appetite is not that strong. But now, with Osama bin Laden captured, do you think that there may be a corner turned into that kind of triumphalism that American films are often famous for?
I tell you, I'm kind of hoping that's the way it's going to be. And I think if anyone can pull it off right now, it would be Catherine Bigelow.
Well, Garen, perhaps we're on the other side of this. I really want to thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Garen Daly is, among other things, host of the Frugal Yankee blog and podcast. In the background, music from the Man on Wire soundtrack. It is an enthralling documentary that plays more like a heist movie and I think deserves special attention today. It's about the fulfillment of French acrobat Philippe Petit's dream to walk a tightrope between the Twin Towers, which he did for 45 minutes on an August day in 1974. Amazed New Yorkers stared up at the tiny figure balancing in the void of what were then brand new towers. A spectacle in the New York sky that would be unmatched for many, many years. Man on Wire is on Netflix Instaplay, and I would recommend it as an inspiring respite for this very weekend. On behalf of all of us here at Word of Mouth, thank you so much for joining us today. We will be back on Monday at noon and again at 9 p.m. right here on NHPR.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Rebecca Lavoie,
Taylor Quimby.
I don't want to say my own name.
Virginia Prescott.
And executive producer Jonathan Smith with oversight and direction.
From me, Abby Goldstein, vice president for programming.
And web support from Brady Carlson.
And Courtney Kenya. We also receive help from our online community of bloggers and contributors.
As well as our ever faithful cast of interns.
Extraordinary interns.
Super awesome interns.
Yay!
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR.
Its board of trustees.
Or its underwriters.
You can join us weekdays at noon and 9 p.m. for more Word of Mouth.
And for information about the show, to post a comment,
or to listen to these interviews again and read our blog,
go to wordofmouthradio.org.
Say something about podcasts here.
Word of Mouth is a production.
Word of Mouth is a production.
Word of Mouth is a production
of New Hampshire Public Radio. New Hampshire Public Radio.
I think we did pretty good.
Can I hear mine?